Today's show is brought to you by HelloFresh. Embrace the holiday bustle at HelloFresh.com and use promo code INTHETHICK30 to save $30 off your first week of deliveries.
If we want to use that analogy of, oh, this is the normal racist dude next door, why don't we write a profile about sexual harassers being normal? Because it's a lot more, quote unquote, normal than you think it is.
Hey, welcome to In the Thick, a podcast about politics, race, and culture from a POC perspective. I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, hosting solo this week while Maria Hinojosa is on vacation. Joining me here in Harlem is Jamila King, race and justice reporter at Mother Jones. Welcome back, Jamila.
Thank you, Julio. Good to be here.
Always great to have you. And also here with me, Terrell Starr, senior reporter at The Root. Welcome back, Terrell.
Hey.
All right, you guys are both In the Thick All-Stars. I wanted to bring, like, the dream team. All right, so this week I want to focus our conversation on two stories from the past week. The whole, like, liberal values blurring into racism. The first story I want to focus on is an article in the New York Times by Richard Fawcett called A Voice of Hate in America's Heartland. The article is a profile of a Nazi sympathizer named Tony Hovater, who marched in Charlottesville, and Fawcett goes to great length to seemingly portray Hovater with care and nuance. And I just want to quickly read an excerpt before we dive into it. In Ohio, amid the row crops and rolling hills, the olive gardens and steak and shakes, Mr. Hovater's presence can make hardly a ripple. He is the Nazi sympathizer next door. Polite and low-key at a time the old boundaries of accepted political activity can seem alarmingly in flux. He says he prefers to spread the gospel of white nationalism with satire. He's a big Seinfeld fan.
What do you guys think about that? Did I capture the mood of it?
You did.
All right, thank
you. Yeah, no, I that was great.
We're going to get initial reactions to this. Jamila, did the Times make the right call in publishing an article like this?
They made the right call with the wrong execution.
Ooh, why?
I think that, yes, it's important, I think, to talk about white nationalists as people who are everyday people. They're your neighbors. They're your local city councilmen. But, you know, I think that a lot of times when folks try to report on race, they don't talk about power. And I think that's what's missing in this piece is a discussion about how this man's whiteness allows him to come off non-threatening. The person who I thought about, actually, Jeremiah Wright, Obama's old pastor, he said some quote-unquote incendiary things about black people in America.
Not God bless America, God damn America. The United States government has failed the vast majority of her citizens of African descent.
We don't know what his favorite TV shows are. We don't know how he grew up. Like, you know
what
I mean?
Do you think he liked Seinfeld, too? Do you think, like,
Jeremiah? Right, I don't know, because he's not afforded that treatment because he's not white.
Terrell, what do you think? Would you be at the Times right now going, come on, people,
had I been the editor who was in charge of that piece, it would not have made it to print.
Why not?
Because it was executed in the wrong way. What drove his hate? Most importantly, what are the consequences of this person next door? What type of violence are they capable of exacting if you do not correct this problem?
Right.
And so none of that was in the piece.
Interestingly enough, the reporter responded to a lot of the backlash about this piece.
Exactly. I was going to raise that. Yeah.
He actually said that one of the things that he couldn't quite get his finger on was the why of, like, what's the thing that turned this person into a white supremacist? And that was missing from the piece, and he knew it. And it's like, you know, he was born in America, one. Like, he was born in a society that was, you know, ruled by white supremacy.
If the journalist is saying, I missed the why, there's moments in that piece that were just kind of like, they were never challenged. As a reporter, you'd be like, what does that mean when you talk about Hitler being chill? Like, go back, push back.
A lot of times you have to ask yourself, is this reporter the right person to do this type of story? You know, that's what I could tell. This person was not really the best individual to do this profile.
In your opinion, because why not?
Why, really simply because there's a way that many white men and to a certain extent white women, when you confront them about their issues of race, they close in and they just and they try to justify why they went about it the way they did without without really taking a chance to indict themselves. In America, there's always an indicting component of the coverage of black people. Black people are always assigned a pathology problem. Whereas with this white person, it is not. At the end of the day, there is no penalty for white people getting it wrong on race. There is always a penalty for
no
black
red
people to like, exist. That is the whole point.
Oh my God. It's like all of a sudden, like, it's like a soccer metaphor. It's like you see the foul, the referee does not take the red card or the yellow card. But God forbid if it was Terrell Starr, Jamila King, or Julio Ricardo Varela, Marina Hossa, it'd be like, red card, you're out of the game. And you guys kind of gave a mixed response. It's like it was the right intention by the Times to do it, wrong execution. But some people have come to the defense of the article, and your colleague Shane Bauer, a senior reporter, Martha Jones, tweeted this. People mad about this article want to believe that Nazis are monsters we can relate to. White supremacists are normal-ass white people, and it's been that way in America since 1776. We will continue to be in trouble till we understand that. Bauer is basically claiming this is explicitly a way to criticize Tony Hovater, not to humanize him. So, Jamila, do you think your colleague's right?
I do. I think that Shane is onto something, especially when he's talking about the fact that racism in this country is endemic, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's dangerous when you let Steve Bannon control your editorial agenda. And I feel like that's what's happening with media right now. We won this election because you ignored white people. And so now the media is like, oh, well, now we have to go cover white people. And it's like, we've been covering white people, right? But the missing point of it is like, there's no power analysis. There's no analysis around what is it that makes a white person able to come to this realization around racism or white supremacy. And I feel like as an industry, we're getting it wrong again because we're trying to pivot so hard after Hillary's defeat.
Overcompensating. For missing the
like
prediction.
Yeah.
This sense of they are normal ass white people. Like, is it a good thing to bring this up this way?
And all due respect to your colleague and to him is that
here we go.
I think that his response was not only condescending, it was very pompous. I would tell him that to his face if he were here, because I think it was that bad. No one is saying that the article should not have been written. He did not address the key issue in the tweet that many people were talking about, that the New York Times gave license to someone to project their racism in the most important newspaper in the world without any analysis. And as you said, Jamila, like, black people are not afforded that. This national conversation that we're having about assault, I have not met one woman of any race who has not experienced some form of harassment and assault. So if we want to use that analogy of, oh, this is the normal racist dude next door, why don't we write a profile about sexual harassers being normal? Why don't we write a profile about people who abuse children? Because it's a lot more, quote unquote, normal than you think it is. So let's just go all the way. But it only comes to race where we want to be very delicate and very fluffy with people. And we don't want to say racist. We say a person who has very racially charged views, but we don't want to say racist. And two, this type of reporting is very inconsistent with how the New York Times functions. No, seriously, think about Mike Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Think about how he was depicted. Think about Classically Beautiful. Trayvon Martin. There are a whole bunch of ways that the New York Times adds, quote unquote, nuance. A lot of times not to our advantage. So just from a basic reporting standpoint, it doesn't function in their racial critique. That's all I'm saying.
So just one thing in Shane's defense. In part, I respect Shane's work, and he does a lot of work around prisons. Terrell, you got on this too. There's something about the machinery of newsrooms that broke. One of the things that the reporter said in response to the controversy over this piece was he didn't have enough time to spend with this person. I don't know what that extra time would have given him
It's not a breaking news story here.
Right.
Like, it's a profile. Like, guess what?
Right. And I think this is sort of where it gets to, like, you know, if you don't understand a community, you're not going to cover it right. And I think we've seen that in the Times a lot with people of color and communities of color. Like, I feel like there's something about feeling like you have to turn these stories around quickly and there's a certain methodology to them.
So how would you have executed this differently, either as a journalist of color, as an editor, as someone at Mother Jones, however you want to view this?
I think that a really good example to how to do this type of story right was done by Rachel Kadziganta for GQ magazine. She did a profile of Dylan Roof. Mm. She's a black woman, and she did this story on Dylan Roof because she felt like white supremacists weren't outed enough. Like, we see black pain and black grief in the news all the time, but we don't actually see the skeletons in the closet of these white folks who suddenly become, you know, really, really radical. And so what she did was she didn't talk to Dylann Roof at all. She talked to his family. She talked to his like black classmates growing up. She went up to his father's house. You know, she had a beer with his father and describes this moment of intense fear because this white man is probably going to sick his dog on her. Right. Like that. I think that that story is a really good way to do this. And so nobody is formed in a vacuum. Talk to the people who created this person.
Right. Terrell, how would you have executed this differently?
One of the first things that I would do is frame the conversation as if I'm talking to the person. I would put myself a lot more intimately involved in it because I don't think that race, particularly as a black person who suffers from the consequences of this white supremacist behavior, I don't think that taking the purely objective approach would have been best.
Let me ask you this question then, and I will start with you, Terrell. What do you tell the well-intentioned white reporter? How would they execute this differently the next time?
I really don't believe that the person has to be black. I think there are plenty of white people who cover race well. One example of that was a story written by Politico from a small town in Pennsylvania. And at the end, the reporter quoted one of the white people who was a Trump supporter who responded negatively to the protests in the NFL as she described players as like niggers for life. Basically,
wow.
The reporter allowed the subjects to essentially hang themselves with their own words. And so that was something that the New York Times piece could have done, but it didn't because it wasn't clear.
Jamila, do you have any thoughts on that?
So I would say that the reporter needs to use their whiteness.
Say more about that.
So Toni Morrison and her brilliant nonfiction collection called Whiteness in the Literary Imagination, she writes that whiteness is only white in opposition to something that's other. Right. Mm. And so this person, this main profile figure lives outside of Dayton, Ohio. Dayton, Ohio is not a whites only area. There are a lot of South Asian folks there. There are black folks there. In the profile, they even talk about the reporter even mentions that there were mixed race couples at this guy's wedding.
Oh, yeah.
I want to know what those folks think. I want to know how those folks, who are the people who unfriended this person on Facebook? Who are the people who have seen this transformation? What do they think about this? What do they think led to his sort of transformation? If it was a transformation, right? Maybe they're like, no, he's always been like this. And that's a story to me, right? Mm-hmm. That's a story of how a regular ass white dude in the Midwest can just be racist as he wants to be in the middle of a community that's full of color.
Okay, Thanksgiving is in the rear view, and it's time to get back to the grind. As they say, back to life, back to reality. But I'm not sure I can deal with cooking from scratch for a while. I mean, last weekend, me and my family, we made stuffing, mashed potatoes, pumpkin pie. I need a break. But I'm not gonna switch to takeout. Luckily, I've got HelloFresh. With new delicious recipes and the freshest ingredients, HelloFresh does the shopping, planning, and delivery for me, so I can take care of everything else. Fewer trips to the grocery store and less time in the kitchen means more time for family and festivities. And they give you recipe cards with 6 easy steps to calm the holiday chaos. Make sure to try the figgy pork tenderloin with green beans and rosemary potatoes. Trust me on this one. For $30 off your first week of HelloFresh this holiday season, visit HelloFresh.com and use the promo code INTHETHICK30 to save $30 off your first week of deliveries when you subscribe. That's all one word, promo code INTHETHICK30.
And if you're a fan of In the Thick, try our sister podcast, Latino USA. This week, why does the tech industry not reflect the diversity of the American workforce? Latino USA takes a look at the tech pipeline, from middle school programs to an algorithm that is trying to eliminate hiring bias, and the team tries to find where the leaks are. Subscribe to Latino USA wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to In the Thick. I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, hosting solo this week while Maria Hinojosa is on vacation. Joining me is Jamila King, race and justice reporter at Mother Jones, and Terrell Starr, senior reporter at The Root. Let's get back to the conversation. Okay, I also want to talk about another moment of this certain liberal values bleeding into racism theme that we got going on. Last week, Zinzi Clemens, who's a writer of color, she quit Lenny Letter, which is Lena Dunham's newsletter, because she accused Dunham of hipster racism. And this happened after Dunham criticized Aurora Perineau, who accused a girls' writer of sexually assaulting her. Hipster racism. It's the idea that because you get racism, you can be racist as long as it's ironic. Like your liberal cred somehow allows you to be racist.
Well, the best way to describe that is just think about New York City. I think New York City is one of the racist places in America, and it's way north of the Dixie line, right? And so just look at our policing system. So when you think about Lena Dunham, I think the first question that ultimately comes to my mind is, what's the consequence of a white person being racist in this country? Mm. What do you suffer? What do you gain? What do you lose? Does that impact her status in Hollywood? No, because all of them think like her, right? And so in order to take on people like Lena Dunham is that Dunham, they need to be stripped of their white fragility in order for them to see any consequence for their behavior. But until then, she'll just be like the other 53% of white women who might as well have voted for Trump. I mean, because at the end of the day, like the damage that they can cause in the, you know, socially is pretty much the same. Mm.
So I have two thoughts on this. One is, you know, imagine Issa Rae. Imagine Issa Rae doing this exact same thing. Mm. Her career would be over.
Oh,
right?
So the show would be dead.
It'd be over. You know, for me, I think I wish that women of color and black women specifically got as many chances to apologize as Lena Dunham. We just don't. If we fuck up, that's it. Right. Lena Dunham is known for apologizing more than she's known for writing at this point. The second point is just like, dude, this was such an unforced error. Like she did not have to say it. Like she did not have to come out with a statement, a jointly written statement defending someone who's been accused of rape. You don't have to do that. Right. Like that's just basic PR, like 101. I want there to be more opportunities for women of color to fuck up.
Yeah, but if you cry, people will say, so what? Go get yourself.
Right.
Here's your 5-year movie deal right here. And so what's the best response to this type of thing? Jamila, why don't you start with that one? Like, in terms of besides saying, like, just don't pay attention
so
to it, right?
So here's my thing.
Don't consume media.
I heard about this story, and the best thing to come out of it was that I learned about a great new author named Zinzi Clemens. She just came out with a book called What We Lose. Buy it. It's good.
So your take is
support the black woman at the center of this.
I like
this
that response. What do you got anything?
Pretty much, same thing. Support the black woman and screw Lena Dunham.
I'm so glad I'm old. I don't know if I can like the whole girls thing. It just leads to sort of this mediocrely talented white women just get away with it.
And I think it's important too that like this is the exact type of toxic culture that has shielded for decades men who have preyed on women or people who have preyed on other people in this industry, right? It doesn't matter in this particular case if this person is guilty or innocent. The fact that you have power coming to the defense of power is what makes this really hard to swallow.
Okay, so let's move on to our final segment, Mic Drop. As you both know, this is the segment where guests get to choose from a list of options for their final words. You say your piece, and then you drop the mic. So we've got 5 options for you guys. Fantasy CNN, What's Missing, Tough Questions, Mea Culpa, and Side Eye. Terrell, what are you going to go with this time around?
My Fantasy CNN would be a segment or a series of stories that indict white America for electing Trump and spend less time on Russia. Listen, I am someone who spends a lot of time on this subject. I have a master's degree and lived in the region. I go to Ukraine specifically where it's dealing with an invasion from Russia. I go there 3 or 4 times a year. But at the end of the day, Russia did not elect an authoritarian leader. America did. And if simple bots and simple misinformation from quote unquote RT or whoever else or social media feeds can undo in a matter of months a democracy that took that required hundreds of years to build, then it's the democracy that's a problem. Russia is considered the culprit in all this dysfunction, but I don't blame the Kremlin. I blame white people. And I think that more segments on TV need to indict the people who elected this man as opposed to the country that is accused of aiding in the in the assistance of getting him elected, because I think we're looking at the wrong culprit.
Jamila, what do you got? What are you choosing?
I'm doing what's missing. So the news just hit that Prince Harry proposed to Meghan Markle, which makes her will make her the one
okay.
Of the
we're
first.
Talking about this. This is the first time I think we've actually talked about any royal thing in the thick in 2 years. I want to see where you're going with this.
Yeah. Okay. So what's missing here? She's getting a lot of play because she'll be the first. So she's biracial. She grew up in L.A. One of her parents is black. So she's getting a lot of play as the first black princess. First of all, props to her. It's cute. Whatever. Do your thing. But also, people are like, oh, the monarchy is less racist. No, it is called the British Empire for a reason. We just saw devastating storms throughout the Caribbean in which former colonies of the British Empire were devastated and had no resources to rebuild, in part because they've been stripped of wealth for generations and generations.
Right.
This is still a monarchy. We are not over race. The British family is not going to be suddenly celebrated, right? Like, let's get reparations to Jamaica. Let's get reparations to these islands.
So it's like the whole, like, I now have a black royal
right.
friend.
There's
like,
a black royal, so we're less racist. No, you're not. You're still racist.
Jamila, why do you think, I'm sorry, I want to ask that. Why do you think so many people think, oh, once you get the black friend, it's like the magic wand. It's like the potion. Seriously, I've been wondering this myself.
I mean, me personally, I would love to have seen Queen Elizabeth's face when Harry told her that he was going to marry this black woman. There's an intrigue, I think, especially around the royal family, and there has been since at least 100 years, right? You know, the context of Britain is important, and I think that the relevancy of the monarchy has been in question for many generations. And the way they could position this, if they even play it right, is they could play this like, well, we're modernizing, right? Like, we have a Negress in our midst.
And so Negress.
We're modernizing. We're no
That's
longer
like,
racist.
I can just picture, like, 20 years from now, like, the movie.
Because it's like, look what they did to Princess Diana, girl. Like, they are not about to just welcome
okay.
you, right?
Wow.
Like, But I think with the black friend, it works similarly, right? It works similarly institutionally as it does personally. It's like, oh, we have a black figurehead, therefore
everything's
we're not
fine.
Bad.
We're post-racial. It's
we're
the same
post-racial.
Obama. All right, so I'm going with side-eye. Everyone knows the Mooch, Anthony Scaramucci, former Trump White House spokesman for like 10 hours. Now he's in a big mess with Tufts University. Scaramucci's a Tufts graduate. He's also on the advisory board of the Fletcher School of Diplomacy. He's threatening to sue Tufts University and this grad student because the grad student wrote this op-ed basically telling Tufts that Scaramucci, the Mooch, shouldn't be on the board of the Fletcher School of Diplomacy. And basically, Scaramucci lawyer wrote this demand letter to Tufts saying, oh, I'm going to sue you guys and this kid. He's mad that the op-ed called him unethical. The op-ed also said that he associated himself with Holocaust deniers. But the glory of this story is that the grad student, his name is Camilo Caballero. And Camilo Caballero immigrated from Colombia with his mom and his family when he was 9 years old. He went to the Georgia Institute of Technology. He's won an award. He wants to be like a work in the Foreign Service or the State Department. And he wrote the op-ed basically saying, I have First Amendment rights. And I'm sorry, Mooch, like you're a public figure. Like, get a tough skin, bro. I gave the side eye to the Mooch, but I'm also creating a new category of like, tough ass immigrant heroes speak out. Jamila King, race and justice reporter at Mother Jones and Terrell Starr, senior reporter at The Root. Thank you so much for joining me on In the Thick.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Julio Ricardo Varela. And remember, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. It really, really helps. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell all your friends. Our producer is Noam Hassenfeld. Our senior editor is Nadia Raymond. Our theme music is Comencemos by Jungle Fire. Some of our music is composed by Noam, and the other music you heard is courtesy of Nacional, Kept, and ZZK Records. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening. Nos vemos. And if Maria was here, she would be like, Julio and I do not agree on this.
That's
at
fine.
All.
Well, that's fine.
That's like my bad Maria Hinojosa.